Welcome, Bucks Nation, to our first ever podcast. This is Buck Wild. I'm here with Mike, who goes by UNF Knoll on the site Bucks Nation. And we figured with the start of training camp and with the name change on the site, now would be as good a time as any to go with our first podcast. And speaking of the podcast here, since the reaction was lukewarm at best to our name change from Buckham to Bucks Nation, we will be taking name solicitations on what we should name this podcast, but for right now, it would just be the Bucks Nation podcast.
And the podcast can be a little edgier. We don't have to mainstream the podcast as well. So
right, so feel free to throw some suggestions on the site, and we'll be more than happy to incorporate those into the podcast. We're not sure how frequently we'll do them, but we'll just give this one a go. And like I mentioned, training camp started yesterday for the Bucks. They reported yesterday, which was Friday, and at 4 o'clock was the fitness test portion. And from what I hear, no one failed, which really isn't a surprise in this day and age with all the off-season workouts and the team monitoring what goes on. It's really kind of an anomaly if somebody were to fail. So that's pretty normal to have everyone.
Albert Haynesworth is an anomaly.
Yeah, well, I guess when you make $21 million up front, you got to be considered an anomaly. The good news is, as we all heard yesterday, was that Donald Penn sounded like they came to a basic agreement on a contract, although nothing's officially been signed. My latest understanding is that he's in camp this morning, or I should say in town this morning, Saturday morning, to negotiate the rest of the deal, which I'm sure is going to be more of is it guaranteed for skill or injury and how long the deal is. And Mike, you were saying the other day on the site that you thought it was going to be something comparable to what Jordan Gross goes. Do you have any other insight?
I can't see why it wouldn't be. I mean, Penn's an elite left tackle. You guys might not realize that, but I mean, he held the first six games he was going up against elite defensive ends last year, and he held them to just a couple of sacks. And so he's an elite left tackle, and the drop-off from him to DeMar Dotson is just, it's substantial. There's no way they could have survived or let Freeman survive with Dotson at left tackle. So it's a good signing, and I would pay him what he wants.
Right. You were saying you thought it might be 5 or 6 years. I'm actually thinking, and I don't have any reason to think this other than just maybe to be a little bit different, is that I'm wondering if it's going to be more of a 3 to 4 year deal, kind of more of a test where they're not tied to him long term. There's not a ton of guaranteed money where it's going to be more, not incentive based, but more, you know, roster bonuses where he has to be in shape and be on the roster to get paid. And it just would, to me, would be a big departure from, you know, Dominic's been saying all offseason, we've all heard it, how he doesn't know what Penn's doing with the weight, and it's tough to lock up a guy long term when he's just apparently, in his word, you know, not committed to staying in shape. But I'm wondering if it's going to be a little bit shorter, but something in the 4 to 5 year range is probably where he's going to be, which, like Mike said, is a good thing. The gap between Penn and the rest of our roster as far as left tackles go is huge, and while Penn may not be the all-pro guy, I'd much rather have him out there protecting Freeman than Dotson or even Zuda.
It'll be interesting to see how long it is, because if it is 3 or 4 years, then, that it obviously means that Penn's side budged a little bit in negotiations.
Right, but I think he would take that as a long-term commitment, given that his only other option to get in camp and play was the one-year tender. So I think if he could get 3 to 4 years, it may not be what he wants, but it may be a compromise he has to make. That brings us next to Rude, and you brought up an interesting point that Rude has kind of gone about this the right way. He's come to all the offseason workouts this year. He's in camp, and he still wants a long-term deal, but as of today, the team hasn't been willing to commit to him long-term. And is that something that you see changing in the near run, or is he just going to be a one-and-done type guy?
I mean, it's tough to tell. The Glazers made an unexpected move yesterday when they did that, so could be an unexpected move to sign Rude. But, he has done it the right way, which is kind of rare in the NFL right now. Players are holding out left and right, and he's just showed up everywhere. So, he's doing the right things. We'll see if the Glazers respond to that. I certainly think it's worth it. I know the opinion varies a little bit on Rude, but I think he's a new contract. So
yeah, I would like to see him extended, but not for a big money deal. I think he's a good middle linebacker. I don't think he's an elite talent. We've all talked about how he has a tough time, you know, bringing guys down in the backfield, how his tackles tend to be downfield, and that is true. That separates him from the elite guys, but I still always go back to his coverage ability and what we ask him to do, and for a cover two middle linebacker, particularly the Tampa two, he has to get down the field, and I think he does an outstanding job with that. I don't know that there's many other middle linebackers in coverage that I would feel as comfortable going down the middle as I do with him.
Absolutely. And that system, I mean, that system last year that Bates put in was just completely unfair to everyone that played on that team. I mean, even Hayes and Black, Black got a bad rap last year, but that system was just miserable. Complete failure.
It was. It didn't fit anyone on the team, and I can see them going with a little bit shorter of a deal, because truth be told, we don't know how long the Tampa 2 is going to be in vogue here. We tried to move away from it last year, and that obviously wasn't a successful move. The thinking is that as long as Morris is here, the Tampa 2 is here. But you have to be willing to admit that at this point there's a lot of unknown, and to lock up Rude for 5 or 6 years when we may only be running the system for 3 years, I mean, that's a huge gamble. So I'm hoping they resign him. I'm hoping this is a short-term deal to show a commitment to him, but to also, you know, say that you work in this system, but outside of that, you know, we may be able to find someone better.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad bet, but I'd like to see him get something rather than just sitting on a one-year tender.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully they get it done. But with all the contract situations, that obviously brings us to the biggest guy, and that would be our...
So I'm actually just reading right now that he agreed on a deal. Gerald McCoy agreed on a 5-year deal with the Bucks.
I was hoping it would be 6 years, but I'll take 5. And it sounds like, to kind of echo what Mike was saying, we're just reading this, so the news is fresh to us. Penn's going to get a little bit more than $7 million annually on a 6-year contract. So that is that's a pretty hefty deal. You know, we're looking at 6 years, $43 million roughly for Penn. McCoy, with it being such a new deal, we don't have any details, but it's safe to say that with a 5-year deal, it's going to be close to $90 million total for both Penn and McCoy. So that's, you know, this goes back to people that want to talk about the Glazers not paying money. And sure, McCoy's our first-round pick. We had to get him in camp, but they didn't have to sign Penn to a 6-year deal. I'm actually pretty surprised, but 6 years, $43 million, that falls right in line with what you were looking at.
Yep. On line with elite left tackles in the league, which I certainly think he is, but the 5-year deal by McCoy, interesting to see how much that's worth, but it's a good gesture by the Glazers getting that done.
Yeah, it's good to get him in camp. He missed, you know, a day and maybe one practice, which is, for defensive tackles, not a big deal. If it was a quarterback, he might could squawk and make a little bit bigger of a deal about it, but for a DT, you know, he's in camp. He's missing a day and missing the fitness test isn't going to make or break him.
I'm sure he'll be in fine shape.
Yeah, so with, I guess with all the contract talk done, we can get on to some of the other players, and particularly we'll talk about the new golden boy of the franchise, which is Josh Freeman. Last year, he came in midway through the year, and he took his bumps and bruises, and he did progress. You know, we didn't expect him to be a world beater on day one, but this is where the work's got to be done. He's had a full offseason. He knows what to expect. He knows he's the guy. And that really goes for the whole regime, too, with Morris and Dominic. They've had a whole year to figure this out now. There can't be any more rookie mistakes. Hopefully we're not going to be firing any coordinators within the next 2 months.
Wouldn't it be the worst thing?
Yeah, we both know our distaste for Olsen. But with Freeman, everything this offseason has sounded good. You know, he's been putting in the time. He's been working extra with the receivers. You haven't seen him in any headlines a la Roethlisberger. So that's good news at this point. We'll just have to hope that he continues to put in the time and that the weapons that we've attempted to get him, they start to develop and we can really get going as an offense.
Absolutely. Excuses are over for Freeman. I mean, he's still going to hit some bumps in the road, but There's no more rookie excuse, no more bad wide receiver excuse. So he's got the pieces. He's had the experience. He has the time in the offseason. So he should certainly improve. How much is the question?
Yeah, speaking of bad wide receivers and excuses, we're going into another camp with Michael Clayton still on the roster. I'm not going to stay on this topic for too long just because I've said my piece on it. But, this has to be it. This has to be either we cut him or he shows up. And we know he can show up in training camp. We've seen that for the last 5 years that he can't excel in training camp. But we get into, week two and beyond is when he vanishes. And I just can't see this guy being a part of the team. If nothing more than he's just a lightning rod for criticism. Anytime we trot him out there, the boo birds are out. People are talking about how he's taking a valuable time. He's not a special team guy. I mean, he's not quick. He gets dinged up pretty easy, although, people talk about his toughness. He is a good blocker. He does get dinged up, and I just can't see him being on special teams, which means he's not as valuable as a Spurlock or as a Huggins or a Clifton Smith, because they can contribute in the offense as well as special teams. And when we're talking about the 51st or 52nd guy on the roster, they have to be able to contribute in multiple phases of the game. And Clayton just can't do that.
Yeah. And truth be told, he's not a terrible depth chart guy, but is Clayton willing to sit on a depth chart without causing a problem? I don't think that's going to happen. So I wouldn't mind cutting our losses with that. And there's a ton of young receivers on our roster.
So. Right, and with we really don't have a true veteran presence at wide receiver. I mean, you could maybe argue Reggie Brown and maybe Stovall, but I don't know that Clayton's a guy that I want teaching.
Yeah, what's he going to teach? What's he going to teach? How to drop?
Yeah, he's probably a little jaded, and maybe rightfully so. I mean, we've been hard on him, but his work ethic was. I mean, he came out and said his work ethic sucked in his early years. So is that a guy that we want around Ben and Williams, showing them the rope, showing them how to be a receiver? Because, I mean, a great rookie year aside, he has done nothing. And to kind of have him showing the rope to the new guys, I just think is a bad idea at this point.
I would agree.
But wide receiver is one of the position battles that seems to be of a pretty big discussion, and we have a lot of different takes on it. Mike and I did an email exchange a week or so back. And my thought is to get the two rookies out there. Mike wanted to get Strotter out there as a guy who's been in the system and who has shown some success. And I can't really disagree with that point. I guess my contention is I'm thinking with Olsen, we're probably running three wide. So I would still count Strotter or Strotter, however you want to say it, as a starter in the slot.
That's fair. I just think the expectations for a rookie wide receiver are too high. I mean, we looked at those numbers. I don't have them in front of me, but we looked at those numbers. They were abysmal for rookie wide receivers, and that was just in the first round. And so I'm a little skeptical. I think they'll be nice players. Might get a star out of one of them, but I don't know that we can expect both of them to be elite-level starting wide receivers and even in a couple years.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they both would develop. I think if we could be guaranteed one of the two would turn into a top 10 wide receiver, I think we all would probably take it. But there's really, to talk about position battles here, I don't see a whole lot going on to hit the offense first. I mean, we've talked about wide receiver just here a little bit, but on the line, I mean, our line is pretty much set, particularly with Penn signing that contract. I mean, there's no question mark as to who's going to be where at running back. Caddy is going to be the guy. Ward's going to back him up, and then we might get Smith or Huggins as the third down back or the scat back. Obviously, Freeman's the guy, quarterback. So the offense seems to be pretty set outside.
I guess the only question there was people did bring up Zuda and how he's underperformed this off season, and I guess Peter Report did a whole thing on him about how his work ethics has been terrible. So we'll see if he keeps his starting job. I think he'll be fine. I think he's a good player. The left side of the line was certainly our strong point last year, and he contributed to that. So
yeah, I think they're going to start looking at maybe not first round next year, but I think a guard is going to come into play here. Because Zuda was drafted for his versatility. He was drafted to be a backup to Sears, and unfortunately, Sears is not going to be part of the team anymore for his personal reasons, and we wish him the best. But Zuda is a decent player. I think if they could upgrade that position, that's something that they would love to do, because, like you said, there are some work ethic questions. The talent is not, I don't think the talent is there for him to be a top-level guy, but can he get the job done? Absolutely. It just may not be like his right side counterpart in Davin Joseph, who is, by all accounts, just a beast out there.
Not saying, but I'm just saying, Rodney Hudson.
Yeah, well, that'd be nice to get another Florida State guy down here. To flip it to the defensive side, I guess let's start from the secondary and work our way in. Tanner Jackson's going to be the starter at free safety, no question there. He's a tremendous player. I think at strong safety, we're all going to cross our fingers that Sean Jones gets the start. Sabby, of course, is back there. Maybe he's a good fit in the Tampa 2. Maybe all that man-up stuff where he was isolated, maybe that didn't play to his strengths, because I hate to be stereotypical here. I don't see him as a intelligent player, but he's athletic, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to put up decent numbers in a zone scheme where he's asked to stick to his one assignment. But you know, there were times last year where he just looked like he was running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Yeah, you're stretching a little bit, but I think Sean Jones will win that job pretty easily.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm predicting too. And we get down to the cornerbacks. We know Tlaib's going to be blanketing all the number ones, and yep. You can't really argue with that. The guy, you know, was asked to do a lot in a bad system last year, and he had his hiccups down the way, but don't have any, as long as he can stay out of the prison cell, I don't have any problem with what he's doing.
Yep.
The other side, Barber, old man Barber, the lone holdover, is still out, still playing. I gotta think, I've said this for 2 years now, I gotta think this is his last year. We've drafted a few guys in Biggers with Myron Lewis this year. Someone at some point has to take the job from him, and I don't think it'll be this year. I think he's still going to be the guy at the second corner spot and hopefully slide into the slot on nickel situations. But at some point, you have to start looking at Lewis or Biggers to fill the role. He's not going to be here forever.
There's no question, but he's still above where Lewis and Biggers are probably at right now, and just lack of experience and even skills. I mean, they're good players. I don't know that either of them. At this point in time, are starter level capable. So,
yeah, and Barber's still, if not the best, one of the best blitzing corners. I mean, obviously the first with 20 sacks and 20 picks. So, you know, if we ask him to do what he's capable of, let's get him out of a man scheme, get him back into his comfort zone as a cover two, as the guy who reads tendencies, and I think he'll be a very good player on this team still. We look at the linebackers, there's really no question. It's going to be Black, Rude, and Geno at the linebacker spot. There's not much to say.
That's a solid linebacking core. They're going to be a little underrated coming this year with Black's less than stellar performance last season. But, I mean, they're fast, and they're all three great players. So I think that's a very solid linebacking core and probably one of the better in the NFC.
Yeah, they're definitely quick. They're most definitely suited to the Tampa 2 defense. And I think the key thing to remember with Black, I mean, we saw Hayes, we saw what he could do. We know Rude's capable of putting up numbers. Black, from a number standpoint, was unimpressive. But we have to remember he was a first year starter. That was his first year in 2009, being on the field, and he was being asked to cover a lot of the tight ends. There was so much talk about him being such an athletic freak and, you know, maybe coming in off the end and being used in some blitzing or some pass rushing situations. And granted, I didn't go back and watch every snap last year, but I can count on one hand how many times I saw him put pressure on the quarterback or be asked to do that. And I think you have to utilize guys for their skill sets. And there's no question that he's athletic. If he's a good pass rusher, let's get him in there. I mean, our defensive ends, are not world beaters. Let's get him into some situations where he can be successful, because as good of a job as he did, maybe covering the tight ends and being in coverage, I think the best thing Morris can do as the head coach and defensive coordinator is put the guys in a place to succeed. And if he's got the nose for the quarterback, let's get him in there.
Yeah, and last year was unfair to all three linebackers. It's hard to judge any of them based on last season just because the defensive line was so poor and put them on islands too many times.
Yeah, and a lot of those islands hopefully will be shut down with defensive line play. With McCoy and Price both under contract and in the fold, I got to think those are the starters. And if not, you're talking about a second-year guy, and Roy Miller is probably going to be a starter if one of those two aren't. So I feel pretty confident with how we are up the middle now.
Speaking of Roy Miller and Price, who do you think is going to win that battle?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Miller early on, but I'm hoping just with what we ask our D-line to do and the motors that we ask them to have, that even though one guy might be the starter, and I'm guessing it's Miller just to go into week one, I'm hoping it's a heavy, heavy rotation. And with McCoy, Price, and Miller, those guys should just be rotated. Let's keep them healthy. Let's keep them to where they're not gassed, and let them do their thing. I mean, they all have incredible motors, and they do have the physical skills. Let's not ask them to play 95% of the snap. Let's rotate them out. If we have to put Sims in there, I'm sure we can find a third and 19 situation when we're up by three touchdowns that we can play him. But I think it's going to be Miller and McCoy, and Price is certainly – he may not be a starter, but I think he gets an equal amount of snaps.
Fair enough. Don't disagree with that.
Defensive end-wise is where I'm a little – concerned. My thought is it's going to be Styles and probably Kyle Moore starting, and I got to tell you, that doesn't really strike a whole lot of fear in me.
God help us with Kyle Moore.
Yeah, I don't know what his deal is. Perhaps, he said that he gets it this year, and we hear this every offseason from every player. They're in the best shape of their life. They've been working hard. The system fits them. They're ready to go. I thought coming out of USC that he was going to be a good player, not a great player. I thought he'd be somebody that would be a nice bookend with a couple good defensive tackles, and he'd get his 5 to 7 sacks, not off of talent, but just off of the situation he was in. And we're talking about him, maybe not starting for our defensive tackles and our defense as a whole to be successful. I mean, we've got to have some threats on the end, and Styles can do it. Consistently, I don't know, but we obviously know that he can get into the backfield. But it's that other end spot that kind of has me concerned.
I think Styles is great as a number two, but Kyle Moore is just I don't like him coming out of USC. His talent level's not there. Last year, he rarely saw the field because he was just when he was on the field, he was just awful. He got pushed around way too easily. So it's a scary position for us, and one that can cost us quite a few big
yeah,
plays.
So we got to hope that he gets in there, or that we discover another gem like Styles. I mean, he wasn't always a household name, and he is at least in Tampa now. But maybe there's somebody on our roster that can fill in as the bookend defensive end. But the defense seems to be where there's the most position battles going on. But I think we all kind of agree that it's going to be Barber and Tlaib at the corners with Sean Jones and Tenard in back at safety. So there are some battles going on, but it seems to be a foregone conclusion. Maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here, but that seems to be what everyone's thinking. So with our team relatively set, at least in our minds, talk about some expectations here. I mean, what do you put out a couple pieces and put your predictions on record in print format as far as touchdowns for and against, points for and against. What are you looking at record wise coming off of a 3-13 year?
It's tough to tell. We certainly don't have the time for this podcast. Maybe this will be the next one. But going game by game, I mean, it's an easy schedule. Relatively, especially compared to last year. I have thrown out the stat that the Bucs have had the hardest schedule ever in the NFL, which is obviously hard to compare year to year, but the metric that I found on Pro Football Reference has allowed that to stand up. So the record or the schedule improves significantly. I think our record improves to a little bit at least to five games. Two wins more, I don't think is asking too much. Six wins is probably, I would say six or seven wins is probably your ceiling. I don't think there's anything higher than that, but I also don't know that's unreasonable to ask of them.
Yeah, I'm in the same ballpark. I, you know, of course I'd like to see Super Bowl run every year, but realistically, I think 6-10 is probably a good goal, and if we end up there, I'm not saying we should be happy with the 6-10 season, because that's still a losing season, we're still not in the playoffs, but realistically, we knew getting into the situation last year with a new head coach and a really young team, that it wasn't an overnight process, and I think anybody who expected immediate success was kidding themselves. You know, this wasn't a Gruden band-aided team that's going to go 9-7 and maybe sneak into the playoffs. This was an all-new team with all-new players, all-new coach, front office. 3-13 is not good. You know, we know that, but it was unrealistic, I think, to expect an 8-8 season. Knowing 3-13, knowing the talent level that we have on the team, I'm pretty much going to peg us at 6-10, and I would take that in terms of our franchise plan, and I'm looking at it as a 3 or 4 year plan. 6-10 in year two, I would consider a success in the grand scheme of things. With next year, 2011, assuming there is a season, that's the we have to be above 500 season. I mean, this is learn the system. This is get comfortable. This is continue to grow the same players. Go 6-10, make some steps in the right direction. But next year's got to be the all right. We're here. We're on the scene, and we're going to do what the late '90s Bucks did. You know, we're going to sneak into the playoffs, and then we're going to be here for 7 or 8 years.
Yep, that's the plan. Let's see if we have the patience to stick to it. I mean, obviously, keeping Morris is going to be key in that. If we have to restart head coach, we have to restart everywhere. So it'll be interesting to see how much patience the Glazers and the fans have with the Bucks.
Right. And, of course, the big topic this year that's not really related to camp and what's going on, but will be the blackouts and the fan support. And, you know, we've kind of touched on that, and the Glazers have all but come out and said there will be blackouts. They're saying there could be, there may be, there probably will be. Realistically, there will be. Unless the team wins often early, the late December games, you know, we'll expect what we saw for the Falcons game, a half-full stadium. Which is going to not be good for those of us who want to watch it on TV, but, you know, as Bucks fans, we'll still support the team. We'll find ways to watch the game. You know, I'd encourage everybody who is a fan to get to the games if they can and support the team in any way that they can. That doesn't mean that you need to, you know, buy in and just be blindly optimistic, as we've discussed so many times, but there's nothing wrong with supporting the team, and that includes some fair criticism from time to time. But with that being said, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this baby up. This was our first podcast. Be sure to let us know what you thought. Again, we're looking for any suggestions you have on the name of the podcast. If we get some good names, we'll take a vote on it on the site. We hope you guys enjoyed it. And
I'm going to go ahead and go drive my black Lamborghini to work now. That's what Derek Ward's into.
Yeah, it was good running the first Absolutely. Podcast with you, and we'll see everybody out on Bucks Nation.
All right, thanks, Bugwell.